بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. مولا يوسف was asking usually that he had seen his Nana and his Dada, and by the grace of Allah Ta'ala they had a set routine. Perhaps they would get up for tahajjud, and they would recite some Quran Sharif, then they would perform Fajr Namaz, then they would sit down for some Zikr, perform Ishraq Namaz, then have breakfast, and then start off the day. So you notice it both in his Dada and his Nana, Dadi and his Nani. So perhaps he was trying to figure out, then why is the same routine not present in today's people? So I explained to him, some years ago, say 35, 40 years ago, people used to say that the two things that have broken up the family structure, one was the pill, and the second was the screen, television. Right. This is what broke up the family structure. And today, what has also helped in breaking up the family structure, social structure, one is the tablet, and the other is the motor car. Now, to understand this, you need a little bit of understanding of life some years ago and how life runs today. Right. So, before there wasn't sufficient wealth, there was a little bit of constraint, and people were quite content in their ways. They had their meals once in a lifetime, they made Hajj. They were comfortable, their children were comfortable, and they continued their lives. And as we became a little bit old in this country, and we saw the comforts, we saw the enjoyment, the luxuries that other people enjoy, and we began to feel within ourselves that if others can enjoy, why couldn't we enjoy? So that was the first change that came into our system. When others are enjoying, why can't we enjoy? But in order to enjoy at a higher level, then we need more money. We need two things to be enjoying at a higher level. One is we need more money, right? And how do we go about getting more money? Is then we'll have the woman also working. Because if I'm bringing 20,000-30,000, then the wife is also bringing 20,000-30,000. So when you're going to get a big pool, big treasure of money, then this will be a gateway to our luxury and our treasure. Right. So the first was, in order for us to get that, then we had to get the woman out of the house. Right. But in order to get out the woman out of the house, we needed to justify her coming out. See, first was the goal, right? We need more money. Why we need more money? We need more luxury. Right? And how do we go about doing this? Is we take out the woman out of the house. She must also do some work, some business. Right? But if she's just going to come out like this, then people will look at her with contempt. What's wrong with you? Why are you going out of the house? So we needed to justify and legitimize her coming out of the house. So then the story we gave up, the cover-up story we gave, is that Muslim also need doctors, female doctors, because it may be a female that is got sick, you see. When she's got sick, then she'll need a female doctor to attend to her. Then a female Muslim will need a female Muslim doctor to see to her. So then that will open up the road for her education. Right. So this was the reasoning. Now, the second thing that comes on the way of enjoyment and happiness is restriction. Restricted. When you're restricted, then you can't move. So one is you needed to legitimize coming out of the house. And the second thing, if you got the whole ummah with you, your 10, 12 children, then how are you going to enjoy? 10 children for a soccer team with you, and you need to go and celebrate, you need to go and enjoy, you need to go and chill down, and here you got a whole soccer team with you, then how are you going to chill out? So then restrict the numbers, control the numbers of your children. 2, 3, hum do, hamare do. 2, 3 is enough now, we can control, we can manage this, we can enjoy ourselves. So this was the whole outlook of life and how it shaped. Within a short period of time, we changed our whole thinking. So then we got the freedom and we got the money. But that freedom and that money had brought us a little bit of more luxury, but it didn't end there. With that luxury, we had to pay the price. Then came the marital problems, difficulties. We only looked at this from one dimension. The dimension we looked at it was from the dimension of luxury. Like a person is looking at sugar, the dimension he's looking at it is sweet, is enjoyable, so tasty. You know, how can you restrict yourself? How can you restrain? But you didn't look at it from another dimension, that you're going to go on to the sugar, that you have to get sugar tablets. And before you know it, then you're going to get into insulin. And then after insulin, you have to go into dialysis. Then after dialysis, then you get into gangrene. And after gangrene, then you have to amputate. Then you are like living on a bombshell. So if you're going to only look at it from one perspective, it's going to be very enjoyable, very tasty. So life also, if it's going to be looked and viewed from one perspective, the perspective of luxury, happiness and enjoyment, and we didn't see the aftermath, we didn't see it from another perspective, then it's going to have its own problems. You'll have depression problems because there's a lot of wealth. And you don't see the type of comfort that you had envisaged, you know. You thought, now, a lot of wealth, flying around, running around here. Then as you got married and you got children and they began to grow up, then you saw that they had problems. You saw that they have got marital problems and you have to listen to their marital problems. Right? You have got business problems. You're looking for high finance. And in the process, then you got business problems with yourself, with your counterparts, with your partners. You got business problems. So you look at it from one perspective, at the perspective of enjoyment and freedom. But then the problems that the business comes up with, we didn't view it. You went into a lifestyle, and you went into a high lifestyle, right? When you went into a high lifestyle, then people began to see you, that you are belonging to this clique and this circle. Now in order to fit within that circle, then you needed to see that you're making that type of money. If you're not going to make that type of money, then you're not going to fit within the circle. When you're not going to fit within the circle, you feel as though you are disgraced and embarrassment where you were living like this, in this type of a lifestyle, right? Right? From Musgrave to Spingo, turning the whole thing around. Hey, boy, but you were living up here, and suddenly you took a reverse and moving on to, what happened to you? So that becomes too much for you to digest. You can't digest that thing. Where were you? And where are you now? Where were you and where are you now? For you to readjust, for you to get your bearings right, becomes such a complicated thing. Now where it starts off, which starts off from this point, that we look at life from one dimension, narrow mind, tunnel vision. One mind we look at it. We don't look at it comprehensively, holistically, we're not looking at it. See the complications, the problems that we bring about. So the first problem was the pull, restrict the numbers. So then, woman thinks, I want to drive around, I can drive around, fly around, I can fly around. See? But then she didn't look at all the other problems that come with life, with enjoyment, with comforts, etc. See? Now, you don't want children, then you'll have just 1, 2 children, right? But then, in the old days, it was such, your mother brought you up. Right? Brought 7, 8 children, and they brought them up. Problems, they were disciplined, corrected under the mother's supervision. The mother couldn't go around everywhere. She was restricted because of her children. And now you thought that you've got unrestricted movement. And because of your unrestricted movement, you can fly around, you can move around. Then you've got children. So how to do away with the children? You put them into the creche. Then you put them into the creche, then you didn't see that level of discipline that you had envisaged and you had desired. Now to go and correct it. When you need to correct it, then go and rehabilitate. And hush this thing down so nobody knows, okay, your child belonging to this family and he has to go to a rehab. Now, you have to suffer that disgrace within yourself, embarrassment and disgrace. So the problem is that we looked at life from a single dimension, narrow dimension. We didn't look at it from different dimensions. Alright, look at it from one, and that was the end of life. So one was the pull and the other was the screen. So what the screen did, the screen helped to shape our minds. We kept on seeing that movies, right? We kept on seeing Hindi films, or whatever other films we began to see. Then we begin to glorify the person that we are seeing. And if a woman sees that person, and that person becomes, like as though that person becomes her mentor, right? Then she wants to see her life going according to that person. And she doesn't see her life working out and panning out like how she views that person. And she is in a depression. Okay, why is this person enjoying his life at this level? Why can't I enjoy what he's enjoying? So she gets into a depression. She studied, she begins to look at all these things here, look at media, look at novels, etc. Then the person that she sees in that novel or in that film becomes the mentor, and she wants to shape her life according to that. And she doesn't see herself shaped in that position, and that brings some type of depression. Why can't I be like that? Then she is sleepless. Then she begins to curse her parents. Why did they get her married to this person here? Or why did she fall in love with that person? Then she begins to curse husband. Now she's got marital problems. The children are watching all the drama that's taking place in the home. Now then you need to go. It's the whole circle. You have to go for some type of counseling, social workers, and some type of counseling. And the counselor, he doesn't have deen. Does he have any deen? No deen he's got. So the counselor is taught certain concepts, right? He's taught certain concepts, certain dogmas, certain concepts he's taught. And then with the concept, he's taught, alright, if this is the problem, then this is going to be the behavior. This is the problem, then this is going to be the behavior. So when he sees that behavior, he says, alright, you fall under this class here. He saw this behavior, he feels that this person comes under this type of a concept. Now treat him accordingly. It may be that it isn't the problem. The problem may be something else. But now he has to fit the person according to what he has been taught. According to how he is tutored, he'll have to fit the person accordingly. So you see the complications that come about. So that was of old. Today, the problem is again, we thought we passed that age, you know. Now came the tablet. The screen is replaced by the tablet. By Padiya Rahmatullah used to say, Shaitan box, right? Now that Shaitan tablet is in every pocket. That Shaitan tablet is in every pocket. Everybody's pocket is there. And every person feels that, no, I know myself. I know myself. I know my limit. Every person feels that. Nobody feels that I don't know my limits. But I'd ask you, ask yourself honestly, from the people that have got this, ask them, which percent of people can say you very safely that from the time I got this gadget till now, I never abuse it for a second. I never see anything wrong for a second. Deliberately or mistakenly, I never see anything with a mistake. How many persons can tell you? And count them on your fingers. Any person that has got it, he will fall into it somehow or the other, at some time or the other, at some point or the other, but he falls into it. And each time, I think the attraction becomes more and more aggressive. First time you saw it, there's an attraction. And the second time you saw it, there's a greater attraction. Sometimes it is porn, it is haram. And sometimes it is just idle sport. What you are viewing is just idle sport. It's either total haram or it's just absolute idle sport. No dini faida, no dunya faida, both ways you are lost. Yesterday, around 10 o'clock, I received one phone call from one Mulana. So he's taken a Jamaat of converts, of new Muslims, right? Some of them brand new, just accepted Islam. I do encourage it, other ulama also encourage it, that everybody needs to get himself in shape, right? And an easy way is to join the Jamaat. Why? Because whilst you in your surroundings, in your own surroundings, right, and habitat, then to change away from your pattern is difficult. So now you're meeting your buddies, your friends, and you within your surrounding, now to reshape yourself becomes very difficult. But when you are in a different environment, then to correct yourself becomes easy, like how in an i'tikaf, you're sitting here, and you fit within the program and you're changing yourself. By the same token, you go out, and then it's a different program that's programmed for you. To correct yourself becomes easier. But compare this as a person that's living in his house. Is it easy for him to correct himself? He can't. It's difficult. His wife is saying one thing. His friends are saying something else. His contemporaries are saying something. And he's got the freedom to do and see and understand everything and anything. So he's got a whole kachumar mind. So for him to put himself on a disciplinary program becomes very difficult. When he's gone in Jamaat, to put himself into a disciplinary program is quite easy. This is how we're going to get up the morning. This is how we're going to spend the morning. This is how we're going to spend the afternoon. And this is how we're going to spend the evening. So there's a whole program. Then if you're spending approximately 40 days or 2 months or 3 months in this tartib, then that becomes like your temperament. It becomes your routine. When it becomes your routine, then all you need is just a follow-up to see that you continue with the routine. But you don't have a routine, and to put yourself into a routine, how difficult it is. Like I was speaking about the old man, what he says is that they were in all, they had a routine for themselves. They had a genuine routine for themselves, and they didn't shift from the routine. And some of the old people, you'll find that they're so strong on their routine, that even they're on safar, they'll be reading their tahajjud, their wazifas, their Quran Sharif, their tasbihat, come what may, but they will do it, and they will do it really religiously. They're not going to move from the routine. Though we will say, alright, when you are traveling, there's something that is called a relaxation. Right? You got a ruksat, you got a relaxation to practice upon. But they will feel incomplete. The routine is stuck into them so deeply, it's become like a drug, like they can't do without it. As though they'll feel very, very uneasy without it. You see? So, that screen is now replaced with a tablet. And I explained that this Jamaat is going, you know, of new Muslims. So it was around the Talim time, perhaps around 9:30 in the day when they sit down for Talim. And one of those new Muslim brothers had walked in. So after the Talim was ended, so he wanted to speak to the Mulana that was in charge. So he was speaking to him and he says to the Mulana, you know, I just see in a dream. And I saw Isa alayhi salam conducting Talim of the Fazail Amal. You know, this kitab we consider and we treat very insignificantly. Every home should have some Quran Sharif and some Hadith, right? If we were to take Bukhari Sharif and study it ourselves without any explanation, then obviously we're going to confuse ourselves. Because that Bukhari Sharif is showing you some masail, some intricate things, some things that are at a very high academic level. Not just at an ordinary academic level, at a very high academic level. Now, when it is at a very high academic level, then an ordinary person, how is he going to digest it? How is he going to come to terms with it? So he needs an explanation. So if you look at the Fazail Amal, actually it's a Hadith kitab. But perhaps Hazrat Shaykh Rahmatullahi, in his humility, he didn't give it a very high name. That's Fazail Amal. So people misunderstood the kitab. But really what it is, it's a Hadith kitab with illustration. A Hadith with an illustration. A life of a Sahabi with an illustration. A Quranic ayat with an illustration. So it is actually a Hadith kitab. Hence he had seen Isa alayhi salam and he is conducting the Talim. Talim has ended, so he addresses him. But why are you supporting Orlando Pirates and Khaizar Chiefs and all that, right? So he got a shock like him to ask, you see. So the Mullah spoke on his behalf, he spoke to me. So I explained to him, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, that sports is a culture on its own. Whether it is national, whether it is international, right? Whether it is soccer, whether it is rugby, whether it is a Muslim, whether it is a kafir, but it is a culture on its own. So that culture would require a certain type of behavior. Every culture has a certain type of behavior. The thing that counts is the behavior, not the clothing. The clothing is just a label. Right? What really counts is what's within the label. So if you have fallen into a culture, then this is how you're going to be counted, that you belong to this culture, you belong to this creed, you belong to this group of people. And nobody wants to be counted amongst that people. وَإِذَن نُفُوسُ زُوْوِجَتْ On the day of Qiyamah, Allah Ta'ala will group people according to their deeds, their culture, their ways, their behavior. He will group them. You got people indulging in, usually they are grouped differently. People indulging in immorality and immodesty, they are grouped accordingly. People indulging in robbing and cheating, they are grouped differently. People that are indulging in other haram, they are grouped accordingly. So this is a culture on its own, they will also be grouped accordingly. If you like that, you wanted to be associated with that, you follow the culture. When you follow that sports culture, then it doesn't end there. Then you want their jerseys, you want their logos, you want their emblems, you want their type of shoes and techies, you want their type of behavior, you want their photos, everything about them. Whichever sport model has become your model, then this is what you will believe in. You will believe in, you will worship the person, and everything that he does, then unquestionably you begin to accept the person. So I explained to him, you see, okay, you need to make up your mind that who are you supporting? Are you supporting these type of sports, whether it is local or international, Liverpool, or it is Orlando Pirates? Both belong to the same culture. They're no different, whether it's here, whether it's there, they're no different. Maybe the emblems are different, maybe they're more professional in their approach, but the culture, the thinking, everything is absolutely the same. It's no different. Culture is the same, whether it's a Formula One, whether it's a soccer, whether it is rugby, whether it's whatever sport you are talking of, but all belong to the same culture. When they belong to the same culture, the thinking will be the same, the ways and the mannerisms will be the same, everything of theirs will be common. So now Isa alayhi salam is asking the person, make up your mind, by who do you support? Are you supporting Islam or are you supporting them? You can't be saying I support them and I support Islam. Both don't, you can't reconcile the both. Islam is poles apart. When Islam wants you, or when you want Islam, Islam says if you want me, then this is like a husband and a wife relationship. When you want me, it's like a husband and a wife relationship. And when it's a husband and a wife relationship, then you're not going to appreciate your wife having you as a lover and some other person as a lover as well. Make up your mind, she would say, that you take me or you take someone else. But you're having two lovers at one and the same time, this is not acceptable. So Islam also is very possessive. Very, very possessive. Not possessive, but very, very possessive. You want me, then you take me full. Udkhulu fi silmi kafa. You take me and you take me full. You take me head on. You take me completely. You can't tell I'm half Islam, half out of Islam. Do you ever hear a woman say, I'm half pregnant? You're pregnant or you're not pregnant? You cannot say, I'm little bit pregnant. You can't say that. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. You can't say, I'm little bit pregnant. You can't say that. That doesn't work. So Islam also, you can't say, I'm little bit Muslim. So little bit Muslim means what? Little bit Muslim, little bit Christian, little bit Hindu, little bit Buddhist, little bit Jew. Gee, that type of Islam doesn't work. Islam or out of Islam. And you take it on full. So the one thing that became a block on the way was the tablet, right? And the second thing that came a blockage on the way is a motor car. Now, when the people hear this now, South Africans hear this, they can't accept this, they can't digest it. How must we move then? I can understand now how you'll be shouting within your heart. How must we move? Must become immobile? How must we come for this majlis then? So the answer is simple, right? That motor car that is used, you try and analyze within yourself, that car that is used for genuine reasons, how much is it?
Otherwise, just for entertainment, running here, going there, visiting this one here, go to this mall, go to that hall, go for an outing, go for a holiday. 70-80% of the time is just entertainment. 25% of the time, it is work. 25% of the time, it's work. And 25% is work. 80% or 75% is just entertainment. So that entertainment, 75%, all your life is gone, your time is gone, your energy is gone, your money is gone, everything is gone. So you see the two things that have come and smashed out the social fabric of this society. One is the tablet, one is the motor car. That motor car is the thing that you worship. See, I got a 4x4, what you got, right? You're not saying it, your mind has got it. Hey, now, you know, your friend also said, now you need to upgrade. What are you driving now? Is it finished now? Upgrade now. Upgrade. This brings us to the point of istiqamat, right? You know, we're talking of the old, and we're talking of the routine that they had set themselves in. They had a routine, they were fixed on the routine, not changing. At any given time, getting up for tahajjud, after tahajjud they're reading the Quran Sharif, after the Quran Sharif they're reading Fajr Namaz, after Fajr Namaz they're sitting for some zikr, etc. After the zikr they're reading Ishraq Namaz, then they're coming home, having breakfast, have a small rest, and going to work. 24/7, that is the routine. They're not looking at Sunday, Monday, whatever it is, like we need to have the morning tea, then we need to have the day's routine. The Quran Sharif has to be done, the zikr has to be done, the namaz has to be performed. That they are looking at as 24/7, like how you would look at the morning tea and toast, that you can't start off the day without that morning tea and toast. By the same token, they can't start the day. They're so fixed into the program. Now, we say, you know, I'm vulnerable, you know, I can change, you know. I'm not so fixed, you know. I'm flexible. And you, as though you say it in a sense of pride, I'm flexible. I can change, I can adjust here, I can adjust. I'm flexible. And they say, you can't turn me. I'm not flexible. So what brought, what they had in their minds, they were not flexible, they were firm. So on account of their firmness, they were good businessmen. They were honest. They were firm in their ways. I did business. I was small. But I was an honest person. I didn't rob. I didn't cheat. I didn't look for that amount. I looked for that honesty. And Allah Pak has created the world that you need to follow procedures to get your rosy. So I did that. But I did that in all honesty, in all faith, in all truth, in all sincerity. I've done it. I haven't moved from the standards of honesty. So that ma'mulat of this, that routine of this, brought them values. And when we said we are flexible, today we can be Muslims, today we can be honest, tomorrow we can be dishonest. Today we can be looking at the Kaaba Sharif, and tomorrow we can be looking at the filth. So that's the flexibility and what it has brought to us. So when we look at the Kaaba Sharif now, it's not bringing us that type of light and that type of inspiration that brought to them. That inspiration that they enjoyed, we're not getting it. That happiness that it brought to them is not bringing to us. That imani power that it brought to them is not bringing to us. What was the reason? The cleanliness, the honesty, and the outlook towards life. In the meanwhile, I've explained myself. I don't say that you can't, you shouldn't be buying a motor car, right? But what I'm saying is it a sports model? Is it an entertainment thing? Or it's a genuine use? It's a genuine use. You use it only for the genuine need. Genuine need that you need to go and visit a relative, you need to do some business, something genuine. Now and then you entertain yourself, it's alright. But entertainment every day, every second day, every weekend, entertainment, kaunsa mazhab hai, kaunsa tariqa hai? Whatever you earn for the week, you're busting it in the weekend. Whatever you earned in the whole year, you're busting up in this part of the year. Is this the culture that was brought down to us from above? Whatever we earned throughout the year, then come towards the end of the year, but let's bust it. Let's end it up and start off again from January. And start off anew. Is this what was brought down to us from our ancestry and from the pious from above? Was it? Or is it an alien culture that we have been consumed by? So when you talk of istiqamat, right? Istiqamat literally means to keep up, to keep erect. So you will need to make an effort to make yourself erect at all times. That means this verse is telling you the effort to make yourself erect is a genuine effort. It's not like you put up a column and the column is just going to remain erect all the time. It's like you put up a column, right? You won't see the column shifting from the right to the left. It's one column from the time that you put it on to the time that it was demolished is just in that one posture, one position. It doesn't change its position. But you are different. You're not like this column. So that is why Allah is saying, istaqamu, inna alladhina istaqamu, that you need to keep yourself erect. Because there's going to be all type of contradictory forces are going to come onto you. Sometimes it's emotions, sometimes it's sentiments, sometimes it's your family pressure, sometimes it is peer pressure, sometimes it is social pressure. Lots of things are going to come upon you. And in all this, what's required of you is istiqamat, istiqamat. Inna alladhina qalu rabbuna Allah, thumma istaqamu. But to get that istiqamat, you have to say rabbuna Allah. You'll only be able to keep yourself erect in that one erect posture, when you really believe in Rabbunallah, when you really say it Rabbunallah. We just say Rabbunallah, but do you know what is in Rabbunallah? When you say Rabbunallah, what it alludes towards, what you are really saying. You know what it amounts to. Like I say, I close the deal, right? I bought the house, I closed the deal at R1 million, right? But what it amounts to now, that you have closed the deal, now shine up. Pay up, no? You'll have to look after that car, or you'll have to look after that house. It's yours now. From now onwards, it's yours. So everything that goes with it, you will have to take care. When you have declared this Rabbunallah, this declaration came after an acknowledgement. It came after a confession. You looked around and then you came to the conclusion that Allah is my Rabb. That you were certain about it. You were convinced about it. You've seen, you understood life, you inspected life from different dimensions. When you checked around and then you said, no, Rabbunallah. I've seen it from every dimension. I've seen it, وَفِي أَنفُسِكُمْ أَفَلَا تُبْصِرُونَ. From within myself also I've seen that Rabbunallah. But when I look at myself, I retrospect or introspect and I see I was a drop. From this drop, I was fashioned into such an intelligent person, such a beautiful looking person, different phase of life, so powerful, so great, and I could do so much thing, I could accomplish so many things. So the drop couldn't have become so powerful and mighty of its own. There was someone magnificent out there that had shaped me and put this type of power, this type of magnificence within me. So I understood now there is a magnificent creator beyond me. Behind me, there is something that is very magnificent, something very great. When you see a professional person, then you say, alright, there was some lot of hard work that went into the making of the person. They were his teachers, his lecturers, his professors, the schools that he had attended to. Their combined hard effort brought about this person. This was a product of all this. So when you see a person, then it's a product of the most magnificent. He put everything, every faculty that's in you, is from him. Otherwise, it is impossible, that doesn't sound to reasoning, that one drop could be fashioned and be shaped like what you are. So complete, so magnificent, so comprehensive, so holistic, so perfect. It can't be, it's impossible. Bring a drop and try and fashion it yourself, develop it and bring it to that level of perfection. Do it yourself, see if you can ever do it. So, when you made the confession, Rabbunallah. Right? Then you, after the confession, after you have accepted this within, then you made the declaration. Then you said, openly, Rabbunallah. So as though you said to Allah Ta'ala, like how you confirm your employment, so you say to your directors, you say to your bosses, from today you are my boss, I am your worker. Today you are my director, I am your employee. When you say that I am the employee and you are the boss, you are the director, then what you are signing up for? You are signing up for this, that you are telling your boss and your employer, your director, you are telling him, that see, you have got all the right to instruct me what time to come, what time to leave, what work to do and what not to do. And what you have got all the right to do that. And I have got all the duty to accept your instruction. This is what you are telling him. Aren't you telling them? You are not spelling it out nor is the worker spelling it out, but it's an accepted thing in his mind and in your mind, that this is what he's going to do, and this is my right, and this is his duty. If he doesn't carry out his duty, right, what he signed for, what is declared, and what is acknowledged, after that he doesn't carry out the duty, then you say you're fraudulent, you're robbing, you're cheating. And you have got the right then to rebuke him, to dismiss him, you've got the right, right? Now, with a little bit of authority, and the little that you are giving him, you feel that so much of right is vested in you, then I ask you, what favor didn't Allah Ta'ala do for you? The thing that you see in you, I ask you, what did Allah Ta'ala not do for you? Everything that's in you, from the head to the toe, every enjoyment, every happiness, outwardly or inner, everything is from Allah Ta'ala. Then how much do you owe to him? What service you owe to him? So that is called, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا رَبُّنَ اللَّهُ ثُمَّ اسْتَقَامُ. Now when you made up your mind like this, you said to Allah Ta'ala, and you declared to Allah Ta'ala that you are my Rabb, and I am your slave, I am your servant, right? That for you there's not going to be any fear. Whether it's going to be xenophobia, or any other phobia, and phobia, whatever it's going to be, it's not going to be a problem. Because you declared, you made that declaration, and you firm on that declaration. So you know exactly, my Rabb is with me. He told me he is my Rabb, and I declared and accepted his slavery. So he's on my side, because I haven't broken the loyalty with him at any time. When I haven't broken the loyalty with him any time, then he's going to be with me, he's going to be supporting me, he's going to be with me. So I got no fear, and I got no regrets. No regrets, I got no fear. After this ayat here, the Quran Sharif verse goes, وَسَيْنَ الْإِنسَانَ بِوَالِدَيْهِ إِحْسَانَ. Right? Allah Ta'ala commands mankind with kindness towards parents. So for some time I've been wondering, why is it that Allah Ta'ala first speaks about being steady and steadfast, and immediately after that he speaks about parents and kindness? What's the connection? What is the link? There must be some link, right? He's speaking about being steadfast. Then he's talking about being kind towards your parents. So if you look at the tarteeb, the sequence of the Quran, one unique thing you'll find in the Quran, a lot of things you'll find very unique. But one very outstanding thing, the character of the Quran is, when the Quran Sharif is talking about some goal, right? It's talking of an objective, right? And the Quran Sharif knows, okay, by you, insan, you're too weak. You won't be able to get to the goal. I will show you a procedure. You want to get to that goal, you understood that you have to be firm, right? You understood that you have to be steady. And you, of your own, you can't be steady and firm. So let us show you a procedure. What is the procedure? وَسَيْنَ الْإِنسَانَ بِوَالِدَيْ إِحْسَانَ. We have commanded mankind with kindness towards parents. That kindness, what does it sum up to? What does it amount to? Kindness. Then I began to think about kindness. And what does it mean? What does it amount to? You know, you say kindness, but what does that kindness amount to? The kindness amounts to this, in my understanding, the kindness amounts to this is sincere appreciation. Absolutely sincere, true. Absolutely truthful appreciation. Like your parents, Allah has used this for a purpose, like your parents, in producing you, they were absolutely sincere. They didn't plan it out, we are going to have a child, and this child will be a money spinner, a money making machine. They didn't have that. They took so much of joy and happiness in producing you, right? Although the intentions may have changed afterwards, when they saw you a very bright person, they said, alright, let's make him a money machine. After some time, they made him a money machine, right? But at the time of birth, it's a joy, it's a bundle of joy, happiness. So it was absolutely sincerity. It's sincerity that they produce you. So the when you talk about kindness, what it amounts to? Absolute sincere appreciation. You appreciate, but with all sincerity, with all love. appreciate. Otherwise, the appreciation can be for some type of personal reasons, personal agendas, right? Old man was sick now, and he sees his children are not by his side, you see. And at that time, he needs some support. He's sick now, he's ailing. You can see he's towards his end, becoming terminally ill. For every small thing, he needs someone's attention. And they're not giving him the type of support that he's got, that he requires. So he whispered to one of his more intelligent children's ears, you know, but I got a big treasure, you know. I got it somewhere. I'll only tell you afterwards sometimes, you know. But it's a very big treasure. I've got so much of gold, so much of diamonds, what is stashed away. So just because I've got an attachment with you, therefore I'm sharing the secret. Now the child doesn't want to leave his father. He's by his side in the morning, he's by the side. The Abba has to tell him, "Bhai, you know, but could do your work. Abba, I just love you, man. I just love you. No other attachment. I have just got some love for you, sincerely." The sincerity only came when he saw the treasure, you see. Before the treasure, that sin, there was no sincerity. Now, right till the end, you know, India was first ruled by Muslims, right? Until about the 1800. So, when it was English rule, so they had to respect and honor the Muslims that were more influential. So that they have a smooth run in the government, they had to show some respect to those Muslims that were more influential. Because when there are people with influence, then they can do out, they can carry out their work. Now they got nobody to do their work, they got nobody influential, how complicated the work becomes. So people that have a lot of influence running and influencing millions of people, they had to give them some special status. They would give them some allowance, etc., etc., they had to give them. So, they came across this one person. The English asked him that, you know, this allowance that we're giving you, $1 million in the month we'll be giving you, you want this only till your lifetime or to be extended after you have died? We're going to give you, but $1 million a month we're going to give you because you're a very influential people, a lot of people come to you for assistance, etc. But do you want this to be just for your lifetime or to pass on after you have died to your family and folks? So without batting an eye, he says, I want it only for my lifetime. I don't want it extended after my lifetime. Anyway, it was signed and sealed. Everything is dusted and sealed. So his family people, they began to shout him, "Bhai, what's wrong, bhai? You know, you could have had something, some pity for us." So he says, "You people haven't understood this. You haven't understood this. See, I asked them that this allowance must be only for my lifetime, right? And when I've got it, then you will also be benefiting. But because it is only for my lifetime, then you will all be making dua that this Hazrat must remain, you know. You'll be making khidmat, you'll be showing the love, the attention, everything you'll be showing to me. But if I had asked them to allow it to be extended after my lifetime, then you will make dua that I die quickly, so that that benefit may be passed on to you. See, the whole thing becomes just a material thing. That person also is just a material machine making, money making machine. He makes the money, so he's respected. So now that son is at the side of the father and he's doing all the khidmat. And it just happened the father's eyes closed. Closed eyes, he's looking for the treasure. No treasure. But the father had to make up a story just to get that security for his khidmat and his service. So, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا رَبُّنَ اللَّهِ ثُمَّ اسْتَقَامُوا. They remain firm. There's no need for them to fear afterwards. Then everything is taken in the stride. When I have declared that he's my Rabb, he's got the right to design my life. He's got the right to instruct. He's got the right to give me 1 rand profit today and 100 billion rand profit tomorrow. He's got the right to do it. And I don't have the right to complain because I'm a slave. When I'm a slave, I don't have a right to complain. He's got all the right to do it. I've got no right. My duty is just to carry out instructions. But the question now is this, I ask, that why did Allah Ta'ala connect this istiqamat with parents? So that we learn sincere appreciation. And when we learn sincere appreciation, right, sincere appreciation we learn, right, that sincere is sincere appreciation, right, it's appreciation but with sincerity, on the basis of sincerity, there is no flaw in the sincerity, then everything will happen. And what will happen thereafter is, when we learn to appreciate the smaller things, we learn to appreciate and show gratitude, be grateful to the smaller things, then won't we be grateful to the bigger things? Because you're sincere and you're grateful. When you're sincere and you're grateful to the smaller things, I ask you, won't you then learn to be sincere and grateful to the bigger things? Then it will bring you to Allah Ta'ala, that when I am so grateful, so sincere to my parents, then Allah Ta'ala, who is entirely responsible, my parents may be partly responsible, but Allah Pak is entirely responsible, then mustn't I be grateful to him? Mustn't I be sincere to him? Mustn't I be loyal to him? So it must bring you to this point. But that is provided you learn sincerity, and sincerity with appreciation and gratitude. You have that, so it will just grow you up, it will develop you, it will bring you up. It will bring you up. When it brings you up, then it will bring you to the point of istiqamah. But you didn't learn to show sincerity, you didn't learn to show gratitude to the small. Now it's impossible for you to show gratitude to Allah Ta'ala. مَنْ لَمْ يَشْكُرِ النَّاسِ لَمْ يَشْكُرِ النَّاسِ. Forget it. If you didn't learn to be appreciative, you didn't learn to be grateful to the smaller people that were responsible for you, your parents, your teachers, and the people that have been good to you, you didn't learn to be appreciative, you didn't learn to be sincere, then it's impossible for you to show the right type of sincerity and appreciation to Allah Ta'ala. Impossible. It can't work out. It's not adding up. So that's why Allah says to you, by now I'm giving you a plan. You want to come onto the line of istiqamat, on firmness, that you are not wavering because of a season, not wavering because of a circumstance, not wavering because of a situation. You have got a steady plan. You have got a steady and a firm plan, right? Then if you want that, then you come onto the kindness towards parents, which means appreciation with sincerity. وَصَيْنَ الْإِنسَانَ بِوَالِدِي. Then Allah Ta'ala speaks about the different phases of your human life. حَتَّى إِذَا بَلَغَ أَشُدَّهُ وَبَلَغَ أَرْبَعِينَ سَنَةً. The difficulties that your parents go in bringing you up, the mother especially, you know, difficulty upon difficulty, difficulty upon difficulty. Father will already know morning sickness and how the woman feels bilious and how she vomits. She's feeling miserable, right? With all that, she has to show a good face to the husband. And she's also under this a lot of anxiety and worry. Then let's hope this delivery goes well. Otherwise, what face I will have before my husband? What face I will have before my family? That you was a failure, you couldn't do this. So much of anxiety, so much of worry, so much of stress she is going through at that time. حَمَلَتْهُ أُمُّ وَهْنًا عَلَىٰ وَهْنًا كُرْهًا عَلَىٰ كُرْهًا. Yeah. Difficulty upon difficulty. One phase after the other phase. But difficulty upon difficulty. The difficulty is just growing and growing. حَتَّى إِذَا بَلَغَ. The mother has delivered the child. And now the child is coming up. Right? He is fully developed. بَلَغَ أَشُدَّهُ. The age of full strength. Father did something, gave the kharcha and all that, right? But the actual difficulty was borne by the mother. Father did something, all the money he did. We don't discount him completely. Can't say he didn't do anything. We're just wasting time. Alright, he did some things. But not in comparison, nowhere near to what the mother had done. All that difficulty was borne by the mother. So therefore Allah speaks about the mother first. Sil ummak, thumma ummak, thumma ummak, thumma abak, thumma adnak. That first person to maintain is your mother, then your mother, then your mother, then your father. But three times mother and then your father. Now look at life, real life, reality of life. The child is born, right? And the child is born, and sometimes in the night the child is crying and is squealing, right? So the father will pretend that he is in a very deep sleep, right? very, very deep sleep, whilst the mother would take it personally that I must see to the comfort of this child. And if the father got a little bit of consideration, he would say, everything is all right, huh? You'll carry on, right? Any help, let me know. Any assistance, that's the most he will do. He won't take the pain to look after the child. Because he feels to himself, you know, tomorrow I got a very heavy day. As though she's sleeping the whole day. That's the impression that you're creating, that as though she's sleeping the whole day, and all the work is only done by you. But you see your contribution compared to the contribution of the mother. Therefore, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is saying, first the mother, second the mother, third the mother, thereafter comes in the father. The difficulty that she goes through. So when this child comes up to his full age, full age approximately about 18, he's developed now, right? He's developed, physically he's developed around the age of 18. But mentally, وَبَلَغَ أَرْبَعِينَ سَنَةً. Mentally, mental maturity at the age of 40, right? So he comes up at around 18, he's matured. Then at about 30, this whole maturity goes up and he develops. Till the age of about 30, 32, he's fully developed. Fully developed. Then that maturity then, he really settles and matures at the age of 40. Because by the age of 40, he's seen a lot of life. He saw birth, he saw deaths, right? He saw every stage of the child. The child is growing up, so every stage of the child is seen. Right? He saw sickness and he saw recovery. He saw failures and he saw prosperity. He saw accidents and he saw recovering. And by the same token, he saw also people that disappointed him, you know. The type of trust I had in the person, and then he just disappointed me. So he saw that disappointment, people that were disloyal and people that were loyal. So he saw everything. He saw failures and he saw achievements. He saw failures and he saw prosperity. He saw people that were truthful and loyal against those people that were dishonest. So he saw all the ups and the downs of life. Now, when he saw so much, he saw so many parts of the world, he saw so many people, he saw life and death, he saw everything he saw. He saw the different phases of life. Now he's fully developed. وَبَلَغَ أَرْبَعِينَ سَنَةً. Now his mind is fully developed because he saw everything. At the age of 18, 19, 20, what has he seen? He hasn't seen things. He's invested so much of love in the person, and then the person turns out to be a cheat. Don't you hear that? You invested so much of love, so much of respect in the person. Did a business deal, right? Invested with someone. And he said, MashaAllah, Alhamdulillah, and SubhanAllah. And you invested thereafter 1 million of your uplang. And after that, he's taken you for a ride. So all this you've seen, by the age of 45, 50, then you need to be fully in your sins. So you saw all these things happening. How people were taking you for a ride. People, what they were doing. Everything you've gone through. Now you are mentally and physically fully developed. بَلَغَ أَرْبَعِينَ سَنَةً. Now when you're so mature and you're so complete, right, then this is the greatest favor of Allah Ta'ala, the greatest favor that Allah Ta'ala has bestowed you. In proportion to the type of favor Allah Ta'ala has bestowed, you must show gratitude. Person gives a gift, don't you think of him, hey, he went for Hajj and from there he brought one special computer part for me, you know. Anytime you want to phone him and you want to thank him about it. And Allah Pak has given you this maturity. He spared you your life that you came to 40 and you fully matured. You see in different angles and different dimensions of life. So He's given so much to you, so much that you know it was mind-boggling that how much He's given to you. Both zahiratam wa batina, inner and outer. Inner satisfaction, happiness is given you. Outer prosperity is given you. Health is given you. And inner ease and satisfaction is given you. Both ways. Within your house also you are happy, and outside in your business also you are happy. So this happiness was given to you by Allah Ta'ala. So you've seen all these things here. Then you say, what do I owe to Allah Ta'ala for all what He has done? Now you become matured. You've seen life. You've seen His bounties and His favors. Then you think to yourself, sit back and think now, Allah Pak, you've done so much for me. How must I pay all this? What must I do for all what you have done? You know, what we miss out in life today, and in fact, in all stages of life, what man loses out and where he fails, he doesn't take time to think. And doesn't take time to think about the favors that he's enjoying. Whether it is the hands of people, whether it is the hands of Allah Ta'ala, the things that he's enjoying, he doesn't think about it. He will only look at it, and he will look at it, narrow vision. He will look at it from one dimension, my hard work, my sweat, my fikr, my smartness. That's the only thing that he thinks about. He doesn't think that Allah Ta'ala put those ideas in your mind. He made you take those steps. And you took those steps and you became a prosperous person. You don't look at it from that dimension. Only from one dimension, from one perspective you look at it, that this is what I made, my achievement. Now when you very developed, you matured, and you sit back and you think, well, these thoughts, these ideas, where did it come from? It came from Allah Ta'ala. But open this type of shop, do business like this, work like this and like this, and don't work like this, do business with this person, don't do business with this person. So those beautiful ideas came from Allah Ta'ala. Although they came not straight, maybe through someone, but it came from Allah Ta'ala. The ability to understand that came from Allah Ta'ala. The idea came from Allah Ta'ala. So when everything came from Allah Ta'ala, then you think to yourself, when he's done so much, this creator, this being that is so compassionate, so loving, he's done everything for me. There isn't a thing that he hasn't done. Now what do I owe to him? So then he brings you to this dua. Rabbi awzi'ni an ashkura ni'mataka allati an'amta alayya wa ala walidayya. Allah Ta'ala, grant me the grace that I ever be thankful to you for the favors that you have bestowed upon me, for the favors that you have bestowed upon my parents. So that's the first thing that you ask Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala, you know, it's so much that I'm enjoying, so much, every step I'm enjoying, every breath I'm enjoying, every sight I'm enjoying, so much of satisfaction, so much of happiness. Allah Ta'ala, I can't contain myself with the happiness that you are blessing me with. But Allah Ta'ala, now give me that tawfiq that I can be thankful to you. I can show some appreciation to you. I know I can't do it like I'm supposed to be doing. Because it's so much. I can't understand the extent of your favors. It's so much. But at least I have some tawfiq, some grace to be able to appreciate and to be thankful to you. So this can only be done if you give yourself the opportunity to think. Sometimes you are reclining on your bed. Now think. You are sitting in the confines of your room. Think about it. How Allah Ta'ala, how grateful He is to me. And then say these words. Allah Ta'ala, I am always happy with you. I am happy with you for you being my Rabb. For you being my creator. For you being my cherisher and nourisher. I am happy with you, Allah Ta'ala. I am happy with you allowing me, Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, to be my Rasul. You have done it with your blessings. With your barakat, with your grace, you have done it. Otherwise, what would have happened to me? If it was not Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that was my Nabi and my Rasul, I would have been behaving like an animal. Like you see how people are behaving around this time of the year. How they're good, what they're doing. I would have been an animal, worse than an animal, I would have been behaving. And as Islam, as my code of life, Allah Ta'ala, it's your blessings that put me into Islam. So Allah Ta'ala, I'm very happy with you. I'm extremely happy. I can't contain my happiness. Allah Ta'ala, I'm extremely happy with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam being my Rasul, being my guide, being my role model, being my Nabi and being everything for me. And Islam as the code of life. So when you're going to be reading this type of words in your own language or in Arabic, Raditu Billahi Rabba, wa Bil Islami Deena, wa Bi Muhammadin Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam Rasula, imagine if you died like that. What a beautiful way to die. Allah may say that you are pleased with me, I am pleased with you. You are happy with me, you are happy with me for whatever I have done for you. You're happy, you acknowledge. So why mustn't I be happy with you? When you're happy and ever pleased with me, see, for the ups and the downs, for the difficulties and the prosperity, but at all times you were happy with me. At all times, you only looked at the favors that I bestowed, so you are always happy with me. Then why mustn't I be happy with you? I'm happy with you. So imagine if you read these words, or you said this word in your own language, and you died in that state, in your sleep, or you got up in the morning and you read these words again. Allah Ta'ala, I'm happy with you. I can eat. Allah Ta'ala, I can pass out. I can go to the toilet nicely. I can enjoy myself with my wife and children. So many things I can do. I don't have any chronic problems. Any type of a complication I don't have. Allah Ta'ala, I'm so happy with you. So can't we say these words at night? Can't we say these words in the morning? Imagine the type of happiness it will bring to Allah Ta'ala. And won't Allah Ta'ala crown us and our homes with happiness? You happy with Allah Ta'ala, you declaring your pleasure, your happiness with Allah Ta'ala. Won't He declare His eternal pleasure for you? What an easy way to bring about happiness within you, within your home. Speak about it to your children, that look at the favors of Allah Ta'ala, look at the bounties of Allah Ta'ala. Isn't it enough reason for you to be thankful to Allah Ta'ala? That you can eat, you can drink, you can see well, you can work well, you can do things. Speak about it to your children. So they also recognize that it is Allah Ta'ala. They don't just think that it's you. You may be the medium, they need to appreciate. But largely and entirely they need to appreciate Allah Ta'ala. When we miss the whole thing, the equation, we lose the equation, then we are more concerned, why is this child not listening to me? We are not concerned whether the child is listening to Allah Ta'ala or not. But why is he not listening to me? We get so upset, child not listening to me, there's no future for this child, I'll curse the child. But the day the child is disrespecting Allah Ta'ala, or any of his commands, do we show that type of reservation? Do we show that type of feeling? What's wrong with this child? He's not getting up for Fajr on time. He's not reading his Quran Sharif. He's not sitting for Talim. Why? What's wrong with this child? He's using this type of character, this type of behavior, this type of words. Do we show that reservation in the child? So as though we became the God. So Allah Pak is showing us in this verse, وَصَيْنَ الْإِنسَانَ بِوَالِدَيْ إِحْسَانَ, that Allah Ta'ala commands that you be kind towards your parents. An easy way to Allah Ta'ala is show kindness. But that kindness, the basis of the kindness must be the base of sincerity, not for any other type of worldly agenda. Now the child is saying, Rabbi awzi'ni, Allah Ta'ala give me that grace, continuous grace, that I must be thankful to you for the favors that you have bestowed upon me and my parents. Allah Ta'ala grant us all.